anti-MAME. So this is what, the fourth in this series, this summer's summer blockbuster sermon series, the fourth movie. How many of you have ever seen anti-MAME? I think we're about 40% this morning, 40 to 50%. Okay. Well, there it is. There's anti-MAME in yellow there on the right, played by Rosalind Russell, with her potential in-laws. The less said about them, the better. Anti-MAME is a larger-than-life figure. Literally leapt off the page. It was first a best-selling novel in, I think, the late 40s. And then it was a stage production. And then it was this movie. And then it was a musical, which is where We Need a Little Christmas came from, written by Julie Stein, I think it was, who wrote We Need a Little Christmas. And that starred, well, on Broadway, Angela Lansbury, one of her award-winning performances, and in the movie Lucille Ball. And now you can probably see it from time to time around town because it's one of the popular Christmas shows that local companies will put on. What's so extraordinary about MAME is no matter what happens to her, she takes it with a grin and embraces it and keeps charging ahead. We meet her through the eyes of her nephew, Patrick. Patrick's father has died, and MAME is his only living relative. And so he goes to live with his Auntie MAME. And we meet MAME with Patrick going into her Manhattan apartment, and she is throwing this extravagant party with all sorts of artistic people in attendance from all over the world. And it's not entirely clear that she knows everyone who's in attendance, but she just kind of flits from one to the next and tries to keep introducing people and meeting different people herself. And she's very excited for her new nephew, her newfound nephew, to meet all of these people as well. Because it turns out she wants to give him every opportunity that she can in life. And that means to explore life in the fullest. The problem is, MAME's brother did not trust her. And so Patrick has a guardian, a financial trustee, that keeps his inheritance and dictates where he can go to school. He ends up going to boarding school after she enrolls him in an experimental school. We'll just call it an experimental school, where the kids evidently run around naked and learn like the, because if it was good enough for the ancient Greeks, it should be good enough for us, I think was the philosophy. Let's see what else happens. The depression happens. MAME loses all of her money, all of her stocks, and has to start working. She's a total disaster at any job she tries to have, including one memorable one at Macy's during Christmas where she cannot make out a proper sales receipt. But she meets Beauregard something Pickett Burnside. I can't remember what the second Confederate general's name was, who turns out to be an oil tycoon and is just taken with her embrace of life and her effervescent personality. And he takes her down to meet all of his Southern relations, and they don't like her because she's a Yankee, and he marries her anyway. And because, as he says, the oil just keeps gushing, they have more money than they know what to do with. They take a trip around the world. They keep sending Patrick ridiculous, extravagant presents from all around the world and pictures of them, the Eiffel Tower, in front of the pyramids in Egypt, all this sort of thing. He dies, falls off a mountain, actually. This is the second death, by the way, in this story, and it is a comedy. She comes back, and they give her a project to write her memoirs. They give her a secretary and a ghostwriter to help her, an editor. She writes her memoirs, which eventually are called Live, 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 when she tells of her fascinating and extraordinary life. But towards the end of this process, other things happen. Patrick has grown up. He's gone to college. He's met an appropriate young woman from good stock in Connecticut, outside of Darien, which is a funny joke if you know anything about Darien, Connecticut. Anyway, they have high opinion of themselves still in Darien, Connecticut. So, 50 years later. Anyway, But it turns out he's fallen in love with the wrong woman, so Mame concocts this extraordinary series of events to break up their relationship and introduce him to the right woman. Part of which is kind of funny. Her stenographer has somehow gotten pregnant and seems to be Miss Gooch, who, when we see her, is all in plain brown and wears very, very thick glasses. And it seems that her only joy in life, other than taking down 170 words a minute, is to have a Dr. Pepper at the end of the day. But at Mame's insistence, she goes out and lives, and ends up getting pregnant. And evidently has no one to take care of her. And so Mame, which would have been extraordinary in the 50s, openly takes care of her in her, I think in those days it would have been called her unexpected or unfortunate condition. Take your pick. That has a happy ending as well. Well, of sorts. It has a funny ending as well, let's put it that way. She lives this extraordinary life, and her philosophy, cleaned up in the movie, I think it's a little more PG-13 rated in the novel, and it is in the musical Mame as well, is that life is a banquet and most poor suckers are starving to death. Life is a banquet and most poor suckers are starving to death. And so whatever happens to her, good, bad, or in between, she embraces it. She embraces the relationships with people that are around her. She looks for new people to be around. She looks for new opportunities. She's always looking for new doors and new windows. That's a song from the musical Mame. Open a new window, open a new door. And she wants to then share those opportunities with those that she loves, particularly with her nephew, Patrick. So, what does that have to do with a life of faith? Well, oddly enough, that philosophy is encapsulated in this mysterious book in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes, written by someone who's usually translated as either the preacher or the teacher, but I'm going to refer to him by his Hebrew name, which is Kohelet. Kohelet is the writer of Ecclesiastes, says so right in verse 1. Kohelet says, or Kohelet writes. And Kohelet meditates in the book of Ecclesiastes on the meaning of life. Ultimately, what is life all about? And there's one thing that Kohelet just cannot avoid. I mean, he breaks it down even further than Ben Franklin does. Nothing is certain in life but death and taxes. For Kohelet, nothing is certain in life except death. Period. And no matter what a person does in their lifetime, no matter how they use the days of their life, whether they do everything right or everything wrong, whether they work hard or don't work at all, whether they spend a lot of money, they spend no money, no matter what happens, everybody dies. And you can't take anything with you. Can't take any relationship you form with you, and you can't take your house with you, you can't take your bank account with you, you can't take anything with you. And Kohelet says, if that is the case, then what's the point? I mean, Kohelet, he can be depressing to read Kohelet, because Kohelet says, you know, all the things that sometimes people tell you that you can leave after you, he says eventually those all wash away too. You know, the famous thing about you go and see a headstone, a marker in the cemetery, right? And there's a date and a dash and a date. You've got the birth date and the date of death. But most of what most of us are interested in is that dash. What happens in between those two dates? But Kohelet, because he's an optimist, would be the first to tell us that you know what's going to happen after somebody etches your name in that stone? The rain and the wind are going to wash up against that stone, and it may take 1,000 years, but eventually that stone will be smoothed out and you won't be able to read it. Not your name, not the date, not the dash. No matter how memorable we would like to be, eventually, whether we're smart or stupid, whether we are popular or not, whether we are world famous or not, eventually all of us will be forgotten. The sands of time will run against that stone. And so then, what's the point? What's the point? And Kohelet keeps coming back to this. You should enjoy the days you've got. You should eat and drink and be merry and find meaning in what you're doing. He says in your toil, in your labor, in your work. But you should find meaning in what you do. Because there's not much else. You can spend all your time trying to build a bank account or build a magnificent house. You can spend all your time accumulating the most friends. Sarah has more friends on me than Facebook by 2.5 to 1, and we joke about that. Because that's the kind of person she is and not the kind of person I am. So we're both friendly, but we go about it in different ways. And that's fine. We all go about it. And some people are very, I mean, they want 10,000, whatever the limit is now on Facebook. I think it's 10,000, 5 or 10,000 friends you can have, you know. Okay. Some people, they measure their lives like that. Some of us measure our lives in how many states we visited or countries we visited or how many wonderful experiences we've had. I don't know. All the different ways you can measure your life. And Kohelet just says, if you find something that's meaningful and good, embrace it. If you find meaning and joy in your relationships, then build them and hold on to them. If you find meaning and joy in making money, then go ahead. You and Warren Buffett can get along well together, and you can have a burger and a Coca-Cola at the end of the day and talk about all the money you've made today. If you find joy in stamp collecting or knitting or traveling or... If you find joy in your work, go into the office. Good. That's the point. Because what else is there? And you know, the thing is, you and I, we recognize that in a few people and we admire it. But for some reason, we just don't take it for ourselves. And sometimes it's because we see people like Mame who are embracing all of life and we call them eccentric. Or just downright weird. It's not that we don't admire them. I mean, they seem to be enjoying... I mean, they're the life of the party, whatever... wherever they are, it becomes a party. It might actually be a party or not, but wherever they are, it's a party. Because they're there. And sometimes we admire it, and sometimes we're tired of it. And we don't want to be a part of it. But there's other people in your lives that you've thought... I mean, think back. You've met people who seem to embrace life... who seem to live out Mame's philosophy of live, live, live. And we admire them. But most of us never really want that for ourselves. Which raises a question. What do we want for ourselves? What are we doing with those days between the first and the last? What are we getting out of them? Kohelet says, all of those days are from God. In fact, I left off the punchline in this morning's reading. Because what comes immediately following this, where I stopped the reading, is the most famous part of Ecclesiastes, the one that was set to music back in the 60s, to everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. And then Kohelet writes this poem of all the different seasons that we have in our lives, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to be at war and a time to be at peace, a time to sew up new things, a time to rip things apart, a time to cast stones, another euphemism for war, a time for gathering stones together, a euphemism for burying someone, a time to laugh, a time to sing, a time to dance, a time to weep. All of those seasons come to us, usually more than one at a time. And Kohelet's wisdom is embrace the seasons you find yourself in. It's one of the things that I think is particularly special about Auntie Mame, because she has some extraordinary good fortune in her life. I mean, after all, I don't think any of us have married an oil tycoon, because the church budget doesn't reflect that, if you have. Just saying. I don't think any of us have married an oil tycoon. We don't have so much money that we couldn't possibly spend it all. But she also had death in her life and financial loss in her life and the unexpected having to take care of her nephew just thrust upon her one day. He just literally walks in because she doesn't read her telegrams. And she embraces all of it. She embraces relationships with people, and sometimes those relationships are positive and nurturing, and sometimes people use her because of her effervescent personality and her wanting to try new things and experience new things. But she embraces that too. The good and the bad and everything in between. She embraces and admits it's a part of her life, and then sees what more of it she can enjoy, and what new opportunities are in store for her. What new windows and doors she can go through this day. What new windows, doors, new opportunities she can offer to somebody else this day. And that's Kohelet's wisdom. A lot of theologians criticize Kohelet because he doesn't seem to mention God all that much. It seems to be more practical folk wisdom than theological wisdom. I can understand that, because I was thinking about it this week, and it seems to me that it's the wisdom of a recent popular Broadway musical, which you are all forgiven if you don't want to admit that you know about, called Avenue Q. Avenue Q is basically a Sesame Street for 20-somethings. There are puppets and adults on the same stage, and they're teaching life lessons, but not life lessons like your alphabet and how to treat strangers, but, you know, life lessons for 20-somethings, like how to, how to get a job, how to cope with having a job you don't like, how to cope with the fact that you can't afford to live where you'd like to live, how to figure out your relationships with your family and your friends, your new friends, how to cope with breakups, all those sorts of things. It's R-rated, by the way, because it's for 20-something, so not yet, Ashley, but in a few years. Anyway, going through this story of learning what the meaning of life is, what the one's purpose in life is, how to live a full life, the last song in that musical is called For Now. For Now. And it admits that all of these things that have happened in the course of the musical, the good and the bad, and some things that are happening in our lives, just in general, are only for now. The headaches and the heartbreaks, that's your life for now. The good things, a new relationship, or a new job, or a new place to live, for now. For now, only for now. For this season. And some of our seasons last a good long time, as the Hoopers are going to celebrate this week, 68 plus years. And some of them last for just a matter of days. Most of them last in between those two limits. And we can be scared of them, or we can embrace them. And as the pastor in me would say, we can say, well, it's all just chance anyway. It's who we happen to bump into. It's who happened to give us a leg up at the office. It's the way we got out of bed this morning, the right side or the wrong side. Kohelet reminds us it's from God, too. Those seasons are from God. And our ability to live fully in those seasons, good, bad, and in between, is from God. I think the first way to live more like the eccentric Mame is just to start identifying some of those seasons and say, right now is good, or right now is bad, or right now is both. And why? and move ahead with it. To appreciate the relationships we have, even as we grieve the relationships that we've lost. To appreciate where we live now, even as we grieve where we don't live now. Either because we'll never be able to afford to live there, or because we've had to move away from somewhere that we've lived. We can embrace the jobs, or at least the things that fill our days now. Or we can lament all the choices we didn't make, or all of the things that we've stopped doing that we did in the past. I was joking with some people who said, wouldn't it be fun if we just went back to college? Life was so much easier then. No? Some people say no, some people say yes. But it's not just the wisdom of Avenue Q or MAME or anti-MAME. Oddly enough, it's the wisdom of the scriptures to embrace the lives we find ourselves in. Good, bad, and in between. To embrace that dash in between the first date and the last date. And to not worry so much about how long it's visible on that stone as the winds and the rains beat up against it. And to know that all those days, including all the days that were before you or I, were even a glint in someone's eye, and all the days that will come long after we've been laid to rest, all of them come from God. It's enough for today. It's enough for today. I like Kohelet. I think Kohelet is just some of the richest part of the scripture. But Kohelet is a fight. It's a challenge. Partially because Kohelet won't just let you be happy. Ever. Kohelet challenges us. But I think Kohelet also offers us a very good way forward. Next week, we'll go from zany comedy and heavy-hearted Kohelet to Star Wars. And we'll see what George Lucas's space opera and lightsabers and Jedis and the Force can tell us about our relationship with God. So I hope you'll come back for that. And then in 2 weeks, Peggy's going to preach. And I'm just sorry I won't be here to hear it. But I hope most of you will be here for that.